BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
I was brought up hearing my dad singing the songs of Northumberland and the Borders. Lots of songs about sheep, shepherds, bloodthirsty border battles and family feuds. When I was little, we moved to Lincolnshire for a few years, which made my dad even more determined to sing those songs, perhaps as a way of reinforcing who he was and where he came from. He was, however, curious to find out whether Lincolnshire had an equivalent repertoire of traditional folk songs. And one day he brought home an LP called Unto Brig Fair, featuring recordings of several old Lincolnshire singers, including Joseph Taylor. And in the sleeve notes, I remember a photograph of some of the singers and the man who discovered and recorded them over a century ago, the Australian-born Percy Grainger. It was many years before I found out that Grainger did more than travel about making field recordings of folk singers, and hearing his own arrangements and compositions was a spectacular discovery for me. His music is invigorating, original, expressive, full of fire, flair and vitality. As a traditional folk musician myself, I became fascinated by this outrageous eccentric, and in 2011 I curated a late-night prom dedicated to his folk-inspired work. As well as classically trained musicians, the performers also included singers June Tabor and the Wilson family to provide an authentic folk voice. Interestingly, when I first spoke to June and the Wilsons about the Grainger prom, their reactions were exactly the same. Ah, Percy Grainger, the man who recorded Joseph Taylor. Singers of English folk songs are very aware of Grainger's invaluable work in this area. He was a great advocate of phonograph recording, using it more than all the other collectors of English folk song put together, and making painstaking and meticulous transcriptions of various different renditions of the same song. Several of the songs that I heard as a child on that Unto Brig Fair LP were the inspiration for one of Grainger's most famous works, his Bunch of Musical Wild Flowers, Lincolnshire Posy, an absolute cornerstone of the wind band repertoire. In Grainger's programme note, he says, "The work is dedicated to the old folk singers who sang so sweetly to me. Indeed, each number is intended to be a kind of musical portrait of the singer who sang its underlying melody, a musical portrait of the singer's personality, no less than of his habits of song, his regular or irregular wants of rhythm, his preference for gaunt or ornately arabesqued delivery, his contrasts of legato and staccato, his tendency towards breadth or delicacy of tone. For these folk singers were kings and queens of song. No concert singer I have ever heard approached these rural warblers in variety of tone quality, range of dynamics, rhythmic resourcefulness and individuality of style." Percy Grainger saw those singers as human beings, not just as providers of the base metal from which musical gold could be extracted. And I love his awareness that it wasn't just the songs and tunes themselves that were worth preserving, but the creativity and skill of the performer. He realised that the song being sung differently in two consecutive renditions did not necessarily point to a lack of memory or control, but could be due to creativity, invention, improvisation, a reaction to the audience. Grainger delighted in those tiny nuances, the ornamentation, the changes of phrasing, he was inspired by them. In my own music, I find myself constantly revisiting certain melodies and exploring different interpretations. Sometimes you have a relationship with a tune that changes over the years, depending on what's going on in your life or who and what other instruments you're playing that tune with. I find it fascinating that Percy Grainger did a similar thing. Lincolnshire Posy, for example, as well as being a windband classic, is a fantastic duet for two pianos. And Shepherd's Hay? Well, Grainger would say that he dished it up in many ways. There's the version for Room Music Twelvesome, his description of a chamber ensemble, and the orchestral version, which I first encountered on a late-night post-concert drive, the radio only just keeping me awake. Then Grainger's flamboyant Stokowski version of Shepherd's Hay came on, and I found myself cheering and applauding on my own in the dark, in the car. But my favourite version might just be the counterintuitively wild and vigorous one for Automated Piano Roll. Thank you. Many classical composers indulge their folk interests by borrowing a tune, then treating it in a grandiloquent way that ignores its original style and context. Not so Percy Grainger. His folk arrangements are extensive explorations of the tune's potential, highlighting its character and finding creative ways of realising it, sometimes scored for defiantly unorthodox ensembles. He often used concertinas, was an ardent defender of the saxophone, and declared the harmonium or reed organ to be the most essential of all chamber music instruments. I love his orchestration of the sea shanty, Shallow Brown. As well as the stipulated 13 instruments, he also suggests an optional piccolo, flute, double bassoon, 2 mandolins, 2 mandolas, 2 ukuleles, 4 guitars and more strings. And there are some interesting instructions. Grainger basically wanted the strummed instruments to have all the strings taken off and replaced with 6 of the same string, all tuned to the same note. It seems outrageous. And yet, it's the rise and fall of that strumming and the tremolando, or woggling as he called it, from the strings, going from one extreme of volume to the other and back again, that gives the feel of stormy seas. I've never heard anything else like it. And Grainger's work has led me to explore my own music in a different way. I decided to mirror the way in which he took folk melodies and transformed them. I reversed the process, reclaiming and arranging them for a new ensemble including folk and classical musicians. I set myself a test, an exercise, to treat the tunes not as traditional folk melodies, but as challenges, to emulate Grainger's breadth of vision, quirkiness and inventiveness. I play the Northumbrian small pipes, which have a drone, so all my harmonies tend to centre around that, even when the pipes aren't playing. Grainger's use of harmony was a revelation. Setting out his ambition to wrench the listener's heart with my chords, he goes on to say, "It is the contrast between the sweet and the harsh that is heartrending." This was a catalyst for me to begin my own version of the English folk song Early One Morning, inspired by Grainger's 1939 harmonisation for large room music or chamber orchestra, which is so poetic and sensitive, starting rather untraditionally in the minor key and changing to major. It's just glorious. I'm constantly bewildered by Percy Grainger. And yet he keeps on reeling me in. His writing is so outrageous that I find myself laughing out loud. You know that feeling where you're shocked but giggling. I can't believe he said that. And his personal life was full of quirks, eccentricities and downright weirdness. There's Keep Fit Percy, nicknamed the running pianist after his habit of jogging to concerts, sometimes bounding on stage just in time to perform. There's also Percy, instigator of his own system of composer rankings, in which he comes in at number 9, well above Mozart and Handel, but below Bach and Debussy. Interestingly, he also included various folk traditions alongside the composers, including Rarotongan part songs from the South Pacific, which he cites as a treat no less than the best Wagner. Then there's Percy the designer, making, and often wearing, his own clothing made from towels, brightly coloured jackets, shorts, leggings and togas, as well as intricate grass and beaded skirts. Ever the inventor, he designed a prototype of the modern sports bra. He also invented notation systems and instruments, including the 8-foot-tall kangaroo pouch tone tool, in pursuit of his ideal of free music, which required the abolition of the scale and its replacement by a controlled, continuous glissando. As he said, "It seems to me absurd to live in an age of flying and yet not to be able to execute tonal glides and curves." To that end, he also collaborated with Leon Theremin in the 30s and scored 3 pieces for Theremin. I recently found a recording on the internet of 4 smartphones using Theremin apps playing Grainger's Free Music No. 1. I suspect he'd be rather pleased. Granger worked with complex metric successions to create beatless music, used chance to dictate musical outcomes, and was attempting to construct machines capable of generating pulseless, scaleless, synthetic sound, years, decades ahead of modern music's most celebrated innovators. There was a darker side to his eccentricity, though. He was a man of unconventional sexual appetites, a sadomasochist with a particular enthusiasm for flagellation. His letters show that he saw this as a way of gaining access to intense physical and emotional feelings, and that it linked directly to his creativity and affected his musical output. "Music is the art of agony," he claimed. "It derives, after all, from screaming." Throughout his life, Granger also propounded various unsavoury racial theories. He believed in the superiority of blue-eyed Nordic races and complained about intermarriage. He adopted what he called blue-eyed English, purging his writing of non-Anglo-Saxon elements. Transparent became see-throughable. A composer was a tonesmith, a viola middle fiddle, and his scores are full of instructions such as louden lots instead of crescendo. His racial views are too extreme to be seen merely as a reflection of the prevailing attitudes of his time. And yet he was bizarrely inconsistent, being friends with and an admirer of Duke Ellington and George Gershwin and championing the work of black Canadian composer Nathaniel Dett. I find the darker side of Granger difficult to reconcile with my love of his music. Like many people, I want to believe that the music I listen to and connect with comes from someone of unimpugnable virtue. It's hard to accept the idea of being deeply moved by something from an arguably reprehensible source. And I am moved by Granger's music, and not just by its exhilaration and vigour. Driving into Newcastle one morning, I listened to his Irish tune from County Derry and arrived at my destination in tears, transported by the intensity and harmonic beauty of his setting for wordless chorus. Too often, people say that Percy Granger left little of enduring worth, that his major contribution is through his folk song collecting and his folk arrangements. Yes, this Australian-born composer, pianist and maverick has indeed contributed greatly to English folk song. But as for the often-held view that a mere arrangement is of less significance than an original composition, I refute that. I come from a strong and vibrant living tradition of folk music. I write my own material, but it always sits alongside traditional pieces, which I arrange, in the same way that I arrange my own work. Composers from a folk music background constantly rework and reinterpret traditional material as well as their own. In our world, there's not such a big distinction between arrangement and composition. It's all part of the same process. In fact, it's often much harder and more time-consuming working with traditional material. Maybe we feel a duty of care to it. And I think Granger had that too. With his folk song arrangements, he tried to be the servant of the tune. Percy Granger was a complete original, subverting the protocols and proprieties of musical convention. He believed that music was a universal art, a democratic art in which anybody could participate. I'll give him the last typically characterful words. "As a democratic Australian, I long to see everyone somewhat of a musician, not a world divided between undeveloped amateurs and overdeveloped musical prigs."